And now, what does reconciliation look like? Can a self-described militant resistor turn toward peaceful, patient activism? The Black Hills Unity Concert is in its fourth year. Yesterday, I talked with one of the organizers, Lila June Johnston. We caught up with her when she was on the road to South Dakota.
The Black Hills Unity Concert was started, this is the fourth annual, so we've been going 4 years now. And we started it because we wanted to create more awareness around the Black Hills land claim, which involved the promising of the Black Hills to the Plains Tribe in the Fort Laramie Treaty. And then later, once gold was discovered, that treaty was broken. And according to our own federal courts, that treaty is the supreme law of the land. And so it would make sense for us to honor that treaty, but it has not been honored, and many Plains tribes are considered trespassers on their own homelands at this time. And so for that reason, we wanted to have the concert to help people understand a little bit more in depth what the issue was and what the injustice was, and to generate unity, not only within the Lakota tribe, but across races, across cultures, across classes, across religions, across everything, so that we can work together to find a real solution, a real resolution that actually works for everyone, and in a way that's non-confrontational, respectful, yet in a way that truly it has integrity and has the courage to look at the truth of the past and address it in a way that it has integrity.
What's the role of really looking at the truth and telling that story in all its complexity to finding some sort of real resolution?
Well, the truth is important, obviously, because a lot of things have been hidden from the history books. Like, for example, I'm Dene, also incorrectly known as Navajo, and 9,000 of my people were marched to a concentration camp, and 7,000 of us died in this concentration camp in 1868. And so no one really knows that that happened. And a lot of people don't understand, you know, very well-intended Americans simply were shielded from the truth, sheltered from the truth. And we don't even realize that the whole foundation of our country is unjust and founded on essentially genocide. So we're trying to bring these issues up gently, because sometimes it's hard for people to understand that what they're standing on has a lot of woundedness that needs to be addressed. And so looking at the truth is important, because if we can look at the truth and love and forgive and heal through it, then we can all be set free. And it's not just for Native Americans, it's for everyone, because if we don't live the truth, then we're living a lie, and that's suffering for everyone.
Do you remember the first time as a child that you've understood the truth? Was it something you were raised with and told about from the elders? Is it something you learned in school?
I actually was raised with all the truth, and it made me very angry as a young woman. And I was raised to be militant, and I was raised to be confrontational, and to be resistant. And so it wasn't until I met Desmond Tutu, who is part of the Truth and Reconciliation Council of South Africa after the apartheid, that I realized there was another way to address the truth that was not negative or confrontational, but that was constructive and healing. And that's my personal take on it, and that's my elders' take on it, is that we can process the truth and digest the truth in a way that's constructive and healing for everyone. But no, I grew up with all the history lessons that you don't normally get in a standard American education. My parents taught me all of the things, from the Dawes Act to Sand Creek Massacre to what happened to the Chickasaw to everything across the map.
Do you have hope or optimism for a real resolution? What does a real resolution, in your words, look like?
You know, in order to find a real resolution, it needs to be from the people. And since I am actually Dene, and I probably need to have some of my counterparts, my Lakota counterparts, speaking on this interview, but they weren't available today. But I am not really one to say, because the solution has to come from the people. And the solution needs to be based in how the people used to use the land and how they see ways to return the land to them. Because it's a tricky thing, because the Lakota understand we don't really own land. We can pretend we own it, but we never really do. We don't even own our own bodies. We have to let those go when we die, too. So they understand that we don't own this land, and yet we are asking settler society to not own the land, but we're not really asking for us to be the owners either, because we understand we can't own it. What we're really seeking is for people to allow Lakota people into these lands without being deemed trespassers, allow them to pray there as they have for tens of thousands of years, and in that way try and create some sort of just friendliness between various cultures and races that uplifts and honors not only the fact that the Black Hills were stolen, but also the fact that a lot of very detrimental things happened to the Lakota people that was not right, and that it's the least we can do to give them access to these lands where they can pray, gather medicines, cultivate buffalo herds, cultivate horse herds, whatever it is they need to do, because not only will the people benefit from that, but the land itself benefits from that, because they're the original caretakers, they're the original stewards, and they have a lot of knowledge about how to do that. So anyways, I would say there is hope for the resolution, but it needs to come from the Lakota people themselves and the current land owners, as it were, because they also need to be part of the solution too. It needs to be kind and it needs to be together, or else it's not really true progress, I think. In other words, I can't answer your question because I think it has to be community-based, and I'm not really one to devise that solution. But we are working on gathering people to talk about these issues and start forming some sort of cohesive vision of not only how we will return the land to the guardianship of the Lakota people, but how we will tend to that land once it is returned. And so I think once we have that vision articulated, it'll be a lot easier to start getting the ball rolling. But we're just trying to get everyone on the same page at this point, hence the name Unity Concert.
And then concert, let's talk about that word. So give me some details about music, workshops, what sort of things can people expect when they want to go?
We have some mostly Native American lineups. We have various genres as well. We have hip-hop, we have singer-songwriters, we have traditional musicians who sing traditional songs. We also have speakers who speak on everything from respecting women to sacred sites and biocultural sites to healing walks that we're going to be having in the coming year, to the Lakota cultural perspective of the Black Hills. We're also going to have poets, mostly youth poets, come. But our headliners are Prolific the Rapper, who is a really amazing spokesperson during the Standing Rock movement and a wonderful hip-hop lyricist, and also Ray Zaragoza, who is a singer-songwriter from the Pima tribe. And she's going to be singing her song. So those are kind of our headliners, I guess you could say. But we're also going to have a water protector honoring ceremony. And we're going to have a water protector women's panel. And in terms of the workshops, we actually have a lot of groups coming in from different parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And we have folks coming from New York City with the Kairos Center. They're a poverty alleviation organization. We have the Center for Earth Ethics, who does original caretakers initiatives around the world. We have Wambli Chea, who's local from Oglala community, talking about creating sustainable communities. We have the Dakota Rural Alliance talking about how they work with tribes to protect lands from oil development. We have Lakota language workshops. We have a Diné woman by the name of Louise Benali coming to discuss Dene Lakota Alliances. We have the International Indigenous Youth Council, which was formed at Standing Rock. And we have Leroy Comes Last from Fort Peck Reservation talking about honoring women's leadership. So those are sort of the workshops we have lined up. Not as many as former years, but we're kind of trying to keep it simple this year.
What's the role of music and poetry in healing in this context?
Honestly, it's not about the music.
Right, yeah.
But the music is a fire that we can gather around.
Okay.
And when we're gathered, then we start to forge these sisterhoods and these brotherhoods, and we start to forge these understandings. And we have a cross-pollination of information amongst tribes. We have tribes coming from Apache, from the Swinomish, the Sliamon, which are Vancouver tribes. We have people coming from the Seneca tribes. We have people coming from the Pima tribes, as I mentioned. We have folks coming from Tibet. We have folks coming from Bear Soldier district of Standing Rock. We have a friend from Guam coming, who's a musician from an indigenous tribe of Guam. And so all these different people are getting together because they're trying to create and weave more networks so that we can start to advocate and articulate our causes more efficiently. But music obviously does have a strong ability to actually convey messages. So I'd say that's the main role of the music, is not so much the music itself, but the medium that it provides to convey these messages.
And tell me why the role of women in leadership is so significant.
Well, I think not only indigenous tribes around Turtle Island, but also people around the world are starting to see the value of returning women to the center. And because women give life, if we marginalize women, we marginalize life. And we're starting to see around the planet life starting to tatter and fray around the edges. And we believe that by recentering women and honoring their voice and honoring their leadership, we allow life itself to lead. And so when we bring these things to the center, we can actually become a part of the healing that the planet needs. And we see that the way cultures look at women is often how they look at the land. So if they see a woman, they think she's an object to be owned, then they oftentimes look at the earth as an object to be owned. And if they see a man's value measured by how many women he can get, then oftentimes a man sees his value by how much land he can get. And so we're trying to reverse all of those things and say women are not objects to be owned, the earth is not objects to be owned. Rather, they are living beings with spirits, with feelings, with needs, with wants of their own, and they have a voice, and that voice needs to be listened to. So that's part of the reason why I think around the world people are starting to try and advocate for more women's leadership.
Who do you want to come? Who do you hope comes out to the event, to the Black Hills Unity Concert?
Well, of course, we hope that the local community comes out of Indigenous peoples. We try very hard to make this of, for, and by the people, even though it's difficult sometimes. But we also don't want to stop there. We want residents of Rapid City to come. We want people of African heritage to come, African-American heritage, Asian-American heritage, and we try very hard to get all the colors of the medicine wheel present so that we can truly unify across races. So definitely interracial audience. We want an intergenerational audience. This year we're focusing on honoring the elders, and we have a youth elder-to-youth knowledge transfer school the first day, so we're really trying to bring that knowledge to the next generation. So we want to be intergenerational. I think we also want it to be not preaching to the choir, but we want people to come who don't know about these issues and are looking for a safe place to become educated about these issues and looking for a safe place to plug in to the general movement.
And tell me what your hopes are for after the concert is over, after the event is all done, people go back to their regular lives. What do you hope could come from this?
Well, one is increased awareness and increased support. So we definitely want the general community to support and stand behind the Lakota people. In addition to that, you know, we are having meetings amongst the elders in the morning. So a lot of the Lakota elders and various supporters will be meeting to see what they can do here forward. And this issue is not new. It's been going on for 150 years. So we understand that this land claim issue has been worked on by generations upon generations. And so we're simply trying to add our little piece to that general movement and trying to give a place for people who already work on this movement to meet and to devise some solutions and paths forward.
You've been listening to Lila June Johnston. The Black Hills Unity Concert runs from September 8th through the 10th at the Elk Creek Resort near Piedmont. You can find more on Facebook.